I am here at the Animal Ag Alliance Stakeholder Summit in Washington, D.C., and just got done hearing from Janet Thompson. She's talking about a personal story and lessons learned. You are a mom, a wife, a farm girl, and have a true passion for agriculture, but I won't ask you to recap your entire story, but hit the highlights on the struggle these animal activist groups took with your family.
Yes, well, my husband and I moved with our not-yet-one-year-old daughter down to Western Australia in 2001. With our life savings, we bought a property there with the intention of building a beef cattle feedlot. And that was just our way of trying to build our own business. We wanted to get into business for ourselves. In 2001, the exchange rate was 2-1, so one U.S. dollar would buy two Aussie dollars. Mm-hmm. Western Australia is a huge exporter of grain and live cattle. We thought it made sense to put the two together before export. The industry, the feed yard industry, is in its infancy in Australia. About 30% of the cattle are grain finished, whereas here it's close to 100%. So it was just our opportunity to get started at a small level and build a business. So we went down there. We were on hold over a year getting all of our approvals to begin with, environmental approvals, which was painful, but we were glad to have gone through that. We thought, yes, we've gotten a good positive answer from the local community and from the state. We've got all of these big issues out of the way. We know that the local town and the state want intensive animal agriculture. And that went well. We grew our business up to 10,000 of our originally planned and approved 15,000 head feed yard. Everything worked great, so we exported to the Asian countries. The proximity to Asia right there was fantastic. Everything that we had identified as a positive market thing that caused us to move down there proved to be as good or better than what we expected. But one thing we didn't count on was an out-of-control government bureaucracy being driven by environmental and animal rights extremists. So in 2007, my husband was the president of the Lot Feeders Association, and he spoke out nationally very publicly against the carbon tax in Australia, which has been a big issue down there. That is a tax that's very damaging to all businesses, but certainly ours. The whole feed yard industry would have been severely negatively impacted by that. So he was speaking out. And he put himself on the radar screen, and a group called the Environmental Defenders Office, which is a nonprofit organization funded by state and federal governments, attacked us. And they've got an intricate web through the whole legal system and politically, this what I call a dark green environmental movement has definitely infiltrated a lot of our institutions that we think are immune from that. So it turned out to be quite an awful story. The Department of Environment ended up changing the rules of the game on us halfway through. They ended up limiting our throughput. So as most of your readers would know, listeners would know, a feed yard's like a hotel. If you keep it full, it makes money, and if you don't, it doesn't. And so they limited our throughput to effectively half of our capacity. Just that condition alone would have been enough to drive us out of business. So we died on the vine slowly over a period of about 2 years, and then we spent the next 2 years fighting it, trying to get some justice through the court system. And then last year we abandoned everything and came back to the States, and we're starting over.
Well, your story struck a nerve with me personally, being a family farm and growing up on a family farm my entire life, that this can happen to anyone. And I think that was kind of the take-home message that I hope everyone saw today. They also shared a story of another specific case with the Hudsons and how they were victorious and that they were able to combat these animal groups right here in the United States. Someone asked earlier during the Q&A, what was it, or you shared the difference between those two cases. Highlight what you think would have helped you win your case in Australia.
Edmund Burke said, "Evil prevails when good people do nothing." There are so many good people in Australia. Truly, it's not a bad place. We loved our life down there, and there are so many good people. But I do say, if just half of the people that came to us privately and gave us support had spoken out publicly, if just half of our unsecured creditors had been willing to put themselves on the radar screen and take a stand against what the Department of Environment had done, at least very unethically, I believe illegally, I believe we would have won. But in Australia, they're very laid back people, and everybody thought, she'll be right. You know, they have a saying, she'll be right, mate. And I think it's that attitude or that laid back nature that probably led to us having a very different outcome from the Hudsons.
You also talked about how you must speak publicly. How can those of us directly related to agriculture and live and breathe it every day speak publicly to be more proactive so this doesn't happen again to our friends and family or to ourselves?
Well, I suppose, Jamie, it's interesting. I believe that to a certain extent we have to stop being so nice about everything. I believe that when we see somebody that's bad, I think we should call them out publicly and say, no, Robert F. Kennedy Jr. and the Waterkeepers Alliance are evil. Say it. We need to remind people of it. We have to stop being, and most agriculturalists are truly honest, good people, and our enemies know how to use that goodness against us. So I think, you know, we can even say those words without screaming at people, without yelling at people, but we need to say them. We need to call a spade a spade.
Well, is there any last words you'd like to share with our listeners that can kind of, they can learn from the lessons that your family did the hard way?
I do believe that when you're dealing with these extremist groups, environmental, animal rights, it doesn't matter how good you are. Mm-hmm. You can do everything right and they will find some way of attacking you. I've come to realize in my own, through this experience, the most important thing is the sanctity of private property. Private property owners need to decide what happens on their property and with their business. And I think this idea that we need to regulate more to keep the bad actors from being bad doesn't stop the bad actors, but it makes it hard for good people to do business. So I think we have to go back to the fundamentals of what this country was founded upon, the protection of life, liberty, and property. And until we do that, until we go back to treasuring private property and what it truly means, mm-hmm. I think we're going to continue to see an erosion and a continued deterioration of circumstances for producers. And that's producers of all kinds. That's mm-hmm. not just farmers and ranchers. That's anybody who does anything positive and productive.
Well, I don't know if I wrote it down verbatim, but it says the improvement of animal care happens because of private ownership, not in spite of it. Kind of enlighten us on that.
This is a really important one because, once again, we're good people. We want good things for our environment and our animals and our communities. Mm-hmm. So we're quite willing to support those movements. But this whole concept of best practice is very damaging. Farmers and ranchers and all producers know that the way to survive is by continually adapting and innovating and changing and doing things better. And when we define best practice, and certainly when we mandate best practice, we kill that. We make it to where people can no longer innovate and change and do things better. So I'm personally very opposed to this whole concept of best practice. There is no such thing as best practice.
Well, yesterday a speaker was talking about choices, and the consumer should have choices, obviously, because as consumers we want choices, but producers should have choices as well. So I think that all ties in together. Janet Thompson, thank you so much for sharing your story. It struck home with me, and I know it struck home with attendees here, and I hope those that we can continue to share your story to help them out. Once again, talking with Janet Thompson, who shared her story fighting environmental groups here at the Animal Ag Alliance Stakeholder Summit in Washington, D.C. I'm Jamie Johansson.